Earn your JD from UNH Franklin Pierce School of Law and join the powerhouse in legal education. Now accepting applications, we are a top 100 law school ranked 5th for intellectual property law. Apply today at law.unh.edu. Professor Buzz Scher joins me to walk through what the impeachment process is and how the rules for the proceedings are determined. This is the UNH Law Podcast. Learn more about the law school and apply by visiting law.unh.edu. Opinions discussed are solely the opinion of the faculty or hosts and do not constitute legal advice or necessarily represent the official views of the University of New Hampshire. So, Buzz, let's start real basic. What exactly does impeachment mean when it comes to the President of the United States?
Actual impeachment is a vote by the House of Representatives in support of articles of impeachment. So technically, the House of Representatives impeaches a president. Then those articles of impeachment go to the Senate, and the Senate votes based on those articles. They have a trial in the Senate, and then the Senate votes based on those articles of impeachment whether to remove the president from office. That requires a two-thirds vote. So technically, impeachment is the start of the process. It's like an analogy to a criminal trial. It's like bringing an indictment against somebody, and then you have a trial, like at least generally speaking, like a criminal trial in the Senate, and there needs to be a two-thirds vote to remove the person from office.
Now, presently, the House has started an inquiry, which is this technically part of the impeachment process, or is them saying we're going to investigate to see whether we want to start the process or not?
Yes, is the answer to the question. It is a process that of gathering evidence to see whether they want to formally go forward and invest and create articles of impeachment, which first the House Judiciary Committee would vote on, and if voted affirmatively, send to the full House for a vote. So again, if you think about the analogy to the criminal justice system, it's like police do investigations. You know, they investigate and gather evidence. And then the grand jury also, then they bring that evidence to the grand jury, and the grand jury can also do further investigation, ask questions, and then they return an indictment. So it's a process. For example, one might think of the House of Representatives as the grand jury, and what's going on now, initially behind closed doors with Democrats and Republicans there, and then shortly, it appears, based on what they've decided in public, calling witnesses in to get them to testify, gathering evidence for as a part of the investigation to provide to the House Judiciary Committee for articles of impeachment.
Is this inquiry process the same that's happened with previous impeachment processes?
Yeah, I mean, it's been varied. Sometimes it's been a lot of preliminary inquiry. Sometimes it's not been a lot of preliminary inquiry. Sometimes it's been behind closed doors. Sometimes it's not been behind closed doors. It really depends on the nature of what they're investigating. In the instance of the effort to impeach and remove from office President Bill Clinton, The House received a ton of information from the investigation that Ken Starr did, the special prosecutor. So they didn't need to start from zero and go up to 60. They were already at 55 miles an hour, so to speak. Whereas here, nobody was doing an investigation. Bob Mueller was doing investigation about the cyber interference by Russia in the 2016 election. He wasn't investigating the matters related to the Ukraine. Right. And so they were starting from ground zero in their investigation. So it's played out a little longer in that way.
Now, say they find enough evidence or the committees find enough evidence where they feel like they want to proceed. What's the next step after the inquiry?
The way it's set up now is rather shortly, they will, the House Intelligence Committee, which has been doing the investigation so far, will hold public hearings. And call witnesses to establish in public the nature of the investigation.
A lot of repeated witnesses, I'm assuming, from the closed proceedings.
Yeah, they may well not call any witnesses they already haven't heard from.
Okay.
Really, one can view what's been happening so far as depositions, which are common in some states in criminal cases. They're very common in civil cases, which before the trial starts, you interview witnesses under oath formally. And that's what's been going on. And at every step, Republicans and Democrats have been involved. It hasn't been a one-sided thing. Unlike a grand jury in a criminal case, a grand jury, the only people there are the prosecutor and the grand jury, 16 to 20 grand jurors. And the prosecutor calls in witness by witness. The defendant doesn't get to be there. The defendant either himself or through counsel doesn't get to ask any questions. Okay. It's all done in secret. So it's different. It's different in that way from the formal criminal justice system. And at the investigative phase, you know, it's different just given the nature of who's doing the investigation.
Right.
When the police are doing an investigation, they don't bring along the lawyers for lawyer for the defendant or the defendant or whoever's going to be on the other side. Whereas here, you know, there have been a good number of Republicans present through all these depositions behind closed doors.
Now, and then they would bring it forward to the House.
So then they have the public hearing. And then based on that, the House Intelligence Committee or other committees that have been doing investigation will send all that information that they've gathered, perhaps in the form of a report that's a little unclear, to the House Judiciary Committee saying, here's what we've gathered. Then it'll be up to the House Judiciary Committee to actually draft articles of impeachment. That is, count one, here's what constitutes an impeachable offense in these circumstances. Here's what is a high crime or misdemeanor or any of the other issues like bribery that are articulated in the Constitution as impeachable offenses. They'll write those up. There may be four or five of them. There may be just one. And then the House Judiciary Committee will vote on them. If they vote affirmatively, then it'll go for a vote to the full House of Representatives. My guess is that'll probably occur sometime in December.
Okay. Now, how many people need to vote for? Is it just a strict majority?
In the House, it's just a majority.
Okay.
Whereas once it goes to let me back up one step. This process I've described, much of it was much of the rules that the investigative committees have been abiding by were rules written by Republicans many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as if this is, you know, the Democratic majority has been writing new rules all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how they were going to proceed in terms of where once they were done with the investigation, the inquiry, how they were going to proceed, they developed a bunch of processes that I've just described that the full House voted on in terms of the rules. The same thing will occur in the Senate. The presiding judge at the trial will be the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court.
And that's an interesting way that brings in the third branch.
It does, although they have really limited role. They're basically there, I think, to keep order.
Okay.
The Senate itself gets to make the rules for how the trial proceeds in the Senate, and the Senate majority is Republican. So led by Mitch McConnell, they will have a pretty significant say on what the rules are going to be. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see, just as it was interesting to see how and when the Democratic majority in the House opened this up and made things public. It'll be interesting to see in the Senate how the Republican majority in the Senate, how restrictive they make the rules in order perhaps to protect the president, or how open and neutral they make the rules to, you know, for any other reason.
Like what sort of general rules might be?
How long a witness can testify. Yeah, I mean, it could be anything. All could be each side only gets to call X number of witnesses. A witness must be can only be on the stand for an hour or 2 hours. What the order of witnesses should be, when the proceeding needs to be done by, you know, a lot of narrowing down can occur simply by putting deadlines on things.
Interesting.
They might develop rules as to what kind of evidence can be objected to or not. You know, in the formal criminal trial, the rules of evidence apply. There's no provision in the Constitution for what rules for information flow, for the admissibility or inadmissibility of evidence will be on the table, will be used at the trial in the Senate. So, you know, the generally speaking, now this comes from somebody who's an evidence law professor, but generally speaking, when you use a formal set of rules of information flow, rules of evidence, it gives the proceeding a better sense that things have been fair, that rules are the rules that are being applied are objective and long-standing, rather than making it up as you go along rules. That's the kind of thing that will, whatever the rules are, the making it up as you go along kind of rules will give a feeling that it's not fair, not fair for, you know, the president, not fair for those seeking to have him removed from office, and most importantly, not fair for the public, for the voting public who elected the president, but who elected a president to follow the Constitution. I mean, that's the ultimate focus here, is this is a really significant event in our democracy to exercise the authority the Constitution gives the House of Representatives and gives the Senate to remove a president elected by the people from office. The Constitution, it's out there. It's clear. The people who wrote the Constitution wanted that provision in there, so there's nothing illegal about it. It's not overturning an election. It's just invoking a particularly significant power that is in the Constitution. And in the end, this is about what do the legislators owe the American people in terms of fairness.
Now, with say it does make it through the Senate, which at this point it'd be very rough. I mean, there's a Republican majority right now. Now, say it does happen to make it through the Senate and they agree to have him removed from office, what would then occur?
He leaves office.
Then the vice president would.
Then the vice president takes office. Then the vice president, there's a procedure for which the vice president can then appoint a vice president. That's what happened when Richard Nixon was removed. He resigned. He wasn't removed from office, and his vice president, Gerald Ford, took over. When Nixon's prior vice president, Spiro Agnew, resigned, there's a provision that allowed him to appoint a new vice president with the approval of the Congress. And some version of that will happen. We've been so seemingly inoculated from high political drama over the last 2 years. But boy, this is the ultimate in high political drama.
It is. It's more than just a Twitter spat. I mean, this is legitimately how our government operates.
And very much so. And it's occurring in a very polarized political environment. It's going to be it'll be very interesting to figure out, whatever the outcome, what effect it has on how citizens view the U.S., the federal government, going forward. You know, there's a big risk that it will forever create a crack in our democracy, like the crack in the Liberty Bell, I guess would be the best analogy, you know?
I mean, every previous impeachment proceeding has been huge. It's, I mean, it's taken over news cycles, how the government operates, it's set up new rules. I mean, everyone's referring back to right now in the 90s.
Yeah. And this, you know, the conduct that was alleged that Bill Clinton was impeached for, if not removed from office, was a particular conduct, lying in a deposition about a affair he had with an intern at the White House. You know, I think most people, whatever one thinks of what happened with the Ukraine, whether they believe it was a quid pro quo, you know, we're not gonna, you know, we're not gonna give you this, you know, $400 million worth of aid or $390 million worth of aid unless you make a public announcement that you're investigating Joe Biden and his son. You know, whether they believe that actually happened or not, whether it even if they believe it happened, whether that's an impeachable offense or not. I mean, that's much more, it's a much more profound concern about how the power of the presidency is being wielded than the lying in the deposition about an affair they had. I mean, that I don't mean to excuse that by any stretch. I mean, it was in its way remarkably outrageous conduct on the part of Bill Clinton. But this is much more profound set of allegations. And you know, if it's not, if the public does not have a sense that the process takes the seriousness, takes the allegations seriously and fairly and neutrally processes them through the system as the Constitution sets it up and as the rules that they're going to develop set it up. If the, you know, the citizenry of the United States comes away from it saying, this process was corrupt, boy, we're in trouble.
It's catastrophic.
Yeah.
It's catastrophic.
Yeah. So it's difficult times.
Thanks for listening to the UNH Law Podcast. Be sure to comment and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Spotify. And now be sure to check out the video version of the show on Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn. See you next Thursday. Join the powerhouse for legal education. Earn your JD, LLM, master's degree, or certificate from a top 100 law school. Residential and online programs available. Now accepting applications at law.unh.edu.